You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
Let's do it later.
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy?
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
This is the DiPietro, Canty, and Rothenberg podcast.
I'm a big star, you know.
Listen live weekday mornings from 5 to 8 a.m. on 98.7 ESPN in New York, the ESPN app, the TuneIn app, or on your smart speaker.
Hey, Alexa, play ESPN New York 98.7.
This is DCR.
Strike three, Cole! Jacob DeGrom ties the major league record. Eight consecutive strikeouts to begin the night.
Jake is a bona fide Hall of Famer, and he's the best in baseball, and I think he's the best pitcher of this current generation.
His trajectory is the Hall of Fame if he continues for the next 3 to 5 years. That's a real possibility.
Dave, you're a big whip guy. The last 3 years, the guy hadn't had a whip over one. Think about that.
I'm surprised you let that alone, right?
Yeah, I'm more mature nowadays.
Yeah, I don't think so.
This is DCR on 98.7 ESPN.
Oh, the big 7 o'clock hour, our favorite baseball guy. I mean, he is so good. And it's the Diamond Report, powered by Mercedes-Benz of White Plains, a proud member of the Pepe Auto Group and the Macallan Double Cask 12-year-old single malt scotch. Buster only. Buster, you have a sponsor. Welcome aboard on opening day.
Nice. Got to love that. That's kicking us off an opening day with a sponsor.
Yeah, that's big stuff for us here. So, I mean, you've been doing this for a long time. Opening day, April 1. Do you still get the butterflies? Do you still get the excitement? Do you still wake up and think to yourself, like, take the deep breath in and be like, here we are, opening day, Major League Baseball?
Absolutely, and especially today because of what went on last year. Like, I'm so excited. I don't know exactly where I'm going to be during the game. I've heard I might be down in the photographer's well. And I, geez, it's been so long, you know, to have the interaction so that, you know, when a Lindor runs out of the field today and you catch his eye and, you know, you give him a thumbs up and he gives you a grin, it's going to be awesome to be able to be there, you know, to have some interaction with the players, even if it's from afar, to be there in person and certainly everything that went on during the Mets offseason gives you a lot of excitement about this team in this moment and what they could accomplish.
So, Buster, where are we at with the Nationals and the positive COVID cases for tonight's game?
Well, we don't know. What we have is the other day, five players got on a private jet with a staffer, and one of the players subsequently tested positive for COVID, and the other four players and the staffer on the plane are also in quarantine at this moment. So I was on the Zoom call yesterday with Mike Rizzo, their general manager, and he said, you know, all of those players are going to be ineligible to play today. They'll pull up replacements today. They'll get more information today. We don't know who they are. Of course, my first concern was when you hear private plane, Nationals, you think, oh boy, I hope it's not Max Scherzer, and it's not. You know, he followed Mike on the Zoom call, and he said he's good to go. They were absolutely, when Mike talked about it, he was like, we're playing tomorrow. And I think the feeling is in baseball, it's 162, it's one game, and so you do everything you can to play. Now, I don't know the names of all the players who are not going to be eligible to play today, but it seemed like the Nationals were very much ready to deal with that last night based on what Rizzo was saying.
Buster Olney with us here, 98.7 ESPN. So, late hours last night, I wake up to the news that Lindor has agreed to a 10-year, $341 million massive deal. Did you always think this was going to get done before the season started?
I was calling agents the last 2 days who were not involved in this negotiation and asking them, and every single one was like, yeah, they'll get it done. Yeah, this is all posturing at the end, and if it doesn't get done, then somebody needs to get fired. That was their perspective, because their feeling was is that when you have a team with so much on the line in the way that the Mets did with Lindor, where you make the big trade in the offseason, he's clearly the guy you want to be the centerpiece, and they wouldn't have made that trade without being willing to spend a lot of money. And then on Lindor's side, if you got a $300+ million offer from a New York franchise with the richest owner in baseball, you better find a way to get that done. Can you guys imagine the pressure that would be on Lindor if they decided, you know what, we're not getting the deal done. He's going to be a free agent in the fall. The pressure, the stress, and the risk. You know, the agents I was speaking with, they were estimating that if he were to get hurt or have a mediocre season in 2021, he might have cost himself something in the range of $160 to $180 million. Which is why all yesterday they were like, no, there's way too much risk for the Lindor in particular to not push this across the line. And that 341, of course, is the magic number because that's just a hair over what Fernando Tatis Jr., the Padres shortstop, got.
Yeah, Buster, we talked about that earlier on in the show. I couldn't even imagine. Like, if you did, even if it wasn't New York, I mean, if you turned down $325 million to bet on yourself going into free agency, forget all the other stuff involved with the landscape of Major League Baseball, but I mean, it would almost be debilitating. Now all of a sudden, you throw on top of it the fact that Mets fans are pissed because you turned down $325 million.
Yep.
That would have been a mess for Francisco Lindor, and more importantly, for the team.
It would have been an absolute mess. And here's the thing, too, and this, again, I'm just parroting what I was hearing from agents yesterday. How much more were you really going to gain, right? I mean, his camp was asking for $385, which over the course of a long-term contract, I mean, $60 million apart with a contract that size, it wasn't a lot more. And they also were saying, look, if you decide now that you aren't going to sign with the Mets, it pretty much burns that bridge that you're probably ever going to go back there. You're talking about forcing your way out of New York where you're going to make a ton of money in endorsements if you play well. You could make up, you know, whatever money you felt like you could have gotten in this contract, you're going to make it up in spades by having endorsements, appearances, and all that stuff. And that's why the agents, all day yesterday when there was pessimism in the media reflected from the two sides, folks who are in the business were like, they have to get it done.
Buster, and Buster only with us here, 98.7 ESPN. I don't know if this is me asking this question because I'm a Mets fan or I really believe this, but let me throw it out there to you. You're obviously the expert here. Do you think we could get to the point where you look at New York and say, oh, wow, that's a Mets town? Or do you think this will always be Yankees first and foremost?
I think it's a coin flip right now. I think there's a chance that the Mets could take over New York. Look, you know, the idea that there's sometimes when you talk about, for example, in other sports where it feels like that, you know, or in Chicago will always be a Cubs town. That's just the nature of it. When the Cubs were bad, it was still a Cubs town. In New York, we've already seen gaps of time in its history when it really was a Mets town, you know, when they won the World Series in 1969, when they had the dominant teams in the 1980s and the Yankees were kind of taking a step back. And so it does feel like right now, as the Mets are getting better and you've got an owner who's willing to spend a lot of money, that it's kind of up in the air. It's a jump ball, and we'll see who grabs it this year. I think the Yankees, you know, favorites to win the American League, excellent chance they go to the World Series, but the Mets are really dangerous. And when a great player like Francisco Lindor becomes available, and he was available to the Yankees in trade, they could have made the same deal, they could have signed him, but guess what? The Mets, you know, in a season in which they increase their payroll by 25%, they are the team that winds up spending for the third biggest contract in baseball history. That's not something that's really been in play the last 25 years.
Buster only joins us here on the show. Buster, don't the Yankees benefit, too, from the fact that, I mean, the American League isn't nearly what it usually is, and that it seems like, and I actually made this proclamation, the National League is loaded, that there are far better teams
real
in the
limb
National
you
League.
Went out on there, Buster. Real limb.
100%. And I think that we have to – we look at what the Yankees did in the context of the offseason. You know, the major arms races were in the National League. The talent shift was to the National League. You know, Lindor moving over there. Trevor Bauer signs over there. You know, the Padres loading up. So I think the Yankees will benefit from that fact that there weren't a lot of aggressive American League teams. And I also think the Yankees are going to benefit from the fact that when we get to the trade deadline and teams are making moves and the Cubs are, you know, dumping off their players and the Giants are dumping off their players, it seems like the Yankees potentially could be poised to have some big additions if, in fact, Kyle Steinbrenner orders them to go over, or orders Brian Cashman, gives Brian Cashman the okay to go over the competitive balance tax. You got to believe that he will, if he sees fans in the stands of the Yankee Stadium.
Is there any way the Yankees don't win this division? Like, do you give Toronto? I know a lot of people are high on them. They have a ton of young talent, and Tampa, it's hard to count them out just because they're always so good. But realistically, is there any way the Yankees don't win this division?
I think that that the Rays are the most dangerous team, as we saw last year. I mean, it's an excellent franchise, and they are absolutely loaded with pitching. Their pitching depth is better than the Yankees' pitching depth. And they run their system with all the matchups with the position players. But I think when you factor in the potential upgrades in midseason, I the Yankees, to me, are the clear favorite over 162 games because of how overpowering that offense is. You know, the Blue Jays have gotten better, but I think when you talk to evaluators who've seen a play, they still feel like that the development of the young guys, the Bo Bichette, Kevin Biggio, terrific young player, Vladimir Guerrero Jr., you know, Nate Pearson, their young, dynamic young starting pitcher, they're still probably a year away from really seriously challenging the Yankees.
All right, Buster. So Dave and the rest of the show forced me to make picks today, which I hate to do.
It was great radio. You would have loved it, radio. Buster.
I stress out all night. I was up at 1:30 trying to figure all these things out, and they had me open the show. So I want to ask you, because I think we're all, I mean, pretty, we'll all be pretty close as far as who wins the divisions. But I want to know, in the American League and the National League, who do you think ends up as the wild card teams?
So, if I remember my picks, because, of course, you get like six different entities ask for your picks, and you're always afraid you're not going to match them up. for me, in the American League East, I got the Yankees. In the Central, I have the White Sox. And in the West, I'm buying the Angels hype. I got them winning the division. That's
wow.
A pick I'm not really that confident in. I picked the Rays to be a wild card team, and I picked Oakland to be a wild card team in the American League. Oakland, yeah, they do have a lot of great players. And, you know, a lot of talent in their rotation. The National League, absolutely the Dodgers to win the West. The Milwaukee Brewers have a ton of pitching depth. And while the Cardinals got Nolan Arenado, they've had concerns this spring about their rotation. And I've got the Braves winning the East. I told you guys, I feel like that the Braves are constantly underrated. People, you know, don't give the depth in their rotation enough credit. My two wildcard teams are the Padres and the Mets. And so that would be a fascinating one-game playoff. How about Jacob DeGrom against Fernando Tatis Jr.?
Oh, how great would that be? Buster, just to make you feel a little more confident in your picks, in the National League, I had the same exact selections to a T.
Wow.
Yeah, that's right.
Wow. Nice. Well, see, great minds.
That's right. Give us a little World Series prediction. Is it Dodgers-Yankees at the end?
It is. I think I just did over-under you know, this morning, and the over-under in the Dodgers, 103.5 wins. I think they're going to go way over. I think this team is going to challenge the standards that were set by the 98 Yankees, 114
wow.
regular season wins, the 01 Mariners, 116 regular season wins. The most wins for any team is 125 if you combine postseason, regular season by the 98 Yankees. The Dodgers are capable of that. You can't take everything that happened in the 60-game season last year at face value. But, guys, they were outscoring their opponents by an average of about 2.5 runs per game, okay? Which means that over the course of a full season, your run differential is going to be close to, like, plus 400. That's insane. And this team has so much dominant starting pitching that David Price, the Cy Young Award winner, is going to start the season in the bullpen. Tony Gonsolin, who's got some of the best stuff in baseball, is going to start the season in their bullpen. And because they've already gone over the competitive balance tax, you know that like the Mets, I think like the San Diego Padres, when we get to those midsummer months when the Cubs are selling off and the Giants are selling off, I fully expect the Dodgers, if they have some holes developed during the year through injuries, they're going to step out and fill them. So I do think the Dodgers are going to become the first team since the 98 to 2000 Yankees to go back-to-back.
Buster, I'm not nearly as confident as you, Darvish, is, but I have to ask you the question because it would benefit my team. Any chance at all that last second we get the universal DH?
I really hope so. Everything I've been told, through the last time I asked the question to someone in the know was 2 days ago. It was absolutely not. It just makes me shake my head, the idea that we're going to start this season with a rule that pretty much none of the National League teams want. Everyone assumes it's not that the universal DH is going to be part of baseball's future. And the idea that it's not in place just is a total reflection of the dysfunction in the relationship between the Player Association and Major League Baseball. And I still can't believe that the two sides couldn't work out some sort of a compensation deal for expanded playoffs. But from everything you hear, they're not really talking about that stuff. They don't really talk that much.
Such a shame. Would add such a great dynamic for the game. So let me see if I understand this. Might be a dumb question. If it's not done by 1 o'clock and the DH is in for the National League, that's it. Now it can't be instituted this entire season.
Well, you know, that's the thing is that we learned last year you can make up rules when you're going along, right? It's like the backyard wiffle ball game that you made with your friends. Okay, if you hit the ball on the roof, that's a homer. No, let's make it a double instead. We saw last year you can do that, and baseball could do that in theory, but from everything I've heard, you know, their intention is, that unless there was a dramatic change, these are the rules as we go forward. Major League Baseball feels like that, that they should have been negotiating over the Universal DH. The union completely disagrees, and with that impasse, Major League Baseball is not going to relent. So we'll, unfortunately, you know, you're going to talk all summer every time a pitcher gets hurt when he's running the bases or batting about what could have been.
All right, but you have another one, Ricky.
No, Buster, I just wanted to ask you, because I mean, this is we're gearing up to have a fight that's not going to be great for the sport, because the sport's already struggling. If all of a sudden now, I mean, if it continues to be as contentious as it is, I mean, God forbid the sport has some kind of lockout or a strike or whatever, it's going to kill, it'll cripple the sport. I mean, is Tony Clark doing a good job for the players? It doesn't feel like he's doing a very good job for the players right now.
I think that across the board, and I've been writing about this for years, that there needs to be a general assessment about how we got to this point, and I don't think that's taken place. Put it this way. When you look back at the CBA that was negotiated in 2016, the rate of drop in average player salary was about 1.5% since then. In all the previous labor agreements, it typically climbed something in the range of 18-20%. That speaks volumes. So is it Tony per se? Is it, you know, the question of whether or not there could be a better team around them? Could there be more engagement? The question that I have on all sides is, why are you not talking? What does it hurt the players to be engaged in having conversations with Major League Baseball about on-field initiatives, about marketing players, about these CBA terms that are incredibly complicated, but it just seems they don't talk. And I think Major League Baseball has some ownership in that. I think Tony absolutely has ownership in that problem. And I think players need to get engaged, and they need to ask hard questions about what the direction they're going.
All right, Buster, listen, great stuff. We look forward to talking to you this entire season. We'll watch you tonight on ESPN for the Mets and the Nationals. And as always, we appreciate it, and happy opening day.
Thanks, guys. You too.
Thanks for listening to the DiPietro, Canty, and Rothenberg podcast.
You're absolutely right.
Catch the show on demand wherever and whenever you want. Just subscribe to us, rate us, and review us wherever you get your podcasts.
Baseball week on Greeny's show. Guess who's going to be his big guest today at 11:30 this morning?
11:30.
Big guest this morning.
One of my favorites.
I wouldn't say one of your favorites.
Greeny. Greeny is one of my favorites.
Yeah, Greeny is great.
I'm going to say Greeny because and Greeny usually gets the top of the top. It'd have to be someone really important in baseball. Are we talking like commissioner report?
No. Someone that has played the game at a very high level.
A-Rod.
Yeah. That's right.
Well, I mean, it makes sense. He's working the game. I mean, he's doing the game tonight. The Mets game.
You are also doubly right without my knowledge. This is how good you are at the game. Commissioner Manfred will be on at 11 o'clock this morning.
That sounds about right. I mean, it's a good Greeny show. I mean, he's going to get
you, did
like,
you
the
know
best
this?
Guest.
I feel like I was bamboozled there. Did you know that both of those guys are coming on and you just played the game there? You swear to me?
It's opening day.
Yeah,
I'm connecting
still,
dots.
The way you got that was very well done. By the way, can I express my displeasure a little bit, or would that be wrong to air dirty laundry?
No, I think you should air the grievances whenever you feel you need to.
Bart and Han get Pete Alonso?
Yeah, I didn't really want to talk about it.
So you feel the same way that I do?
Yeah, absolutely. We're the two biggest Mets fans at the station.
Well, Don's a big Mets fan, too.
Don didn't pick the Mets to make the playoffs yesterday.
That doesn't
Dave.
Mean he's not a big Mets fan.
No, I disagree. It's too close not to pick the Mets. You don't look like Bart saying he would pick Pete Alonso over Aaron. Like, Pete Alonso's a better baseball player than Aaron Judge. might be like now you're.
It's a ridiculous take.
Yeah, exactly right. Now you're like that. That's straight homer take.
Is that how they got him though? They said we will just wax poetic on you being the best baseball player in the entire league.
No, he said it. I've heard him say that before. I've heard the conversation.
Maybe that's
before.
Why he wanted to go on the show. You have to do one show on ESPN. Let me go on Bart and Hahn. They think I'm the best player.
Yeah, but I mean to have the Mets at least as the wild card. I mean, that's legitimate.
I'm not going to beat Donna up over that. I'm going to beat RJ for the fact that how in the world does he wind up on that show? They're not even, I don't even know, is Bart's not a Mets fan, is he? And if he is, he's a nominal Mets fan. We deserve Pete Alonso on this show.
Yeah, but look what time we're doing the show. You think that Pete Alonso is awake right now?
You don't think that Pete Alonso is awake at 7:40?
No.
You baseball, really don't?
No. Baseball players have a completely different schedule than other athletes. I can guarantee he probably sleeps till at least 10 o'clock.
Really?
At least.
Even in a non-game day, 10 o'clock.
No, you got to get yourself on a schedule. I mean, you put yourself on a schedule, right? Oh, maybe I shouldn't say that. Maybe a little bit earlier because he's been down in Florida with spring training. They're probably up earlier. No, they're definitely up earlier in spring training.
Well, tell me this, though. If RJ would have said, guys, can you hang out till 8:45 or 9 o'clock or dial back in at 9 o'clock and we'll pre-tape with Alonso and play it the next day, you wouldn't have done that?
Oh, of course I would have done that.
All right, so?
So let me defend myself here for a moment.
Yeah.
There was a Met that will remain unnamed that we played that game with, and it went really poorly.
Well, because he never showed up.
Exactly. So do I dare run that risk again?
But here's what I would say. The Met that we played that game with was not nearly as high profile as Pete Alonso would be. Okay. I think that we would give a lot longer leash if it was the great Pete Alonso.
So if he was half hour, hour late, you'd be okay with that? Or no-showed? Not to say he would, but you'd be okay with it.
Why would you think that he would no-show?
I didn't think the last guy would either.
He's deflecting is what he's doing.
No. See, I completely disagree. You see what's happening here is that RJ is so gun-shy now to make a move. Mm-hmm. That could turn out wrong because you'll just on the air in front of everyone listening, we'll take the bus, put it in reverse, and just back up right over RJ every single time.
I'll turn this damn bus around. That'll end your precious little field trip pretty damn quick.
Walk all over us. And he's a Yankees fan and not get us the Mets guest and just do whatever he wants and not hold him accountable. Is that what you're looking for? Because if I make one misstep, I'm all of a sudden the focal point of everything. So other people should not be able to be called out onto the carpet?
Wait. You get drops made out of you. You're over here dragging one of the hardest working people, not just at this station, but possibly in the industry.
When did I ever look down on the effort that RJ puts into the show?
You're essentially blaming him for this happening. You're saying this is his fault. Maybe you should point the finger at the Mets or the player who left you twisting in the wind that day.
See, that's the thing that Dave doesn't realize.
The team that you're picking for the second wildcard spot.
RJ is lacking in his production work, and I become the bad guy.
Yeah, but here's why you would be fired immediately. Like, this is why if you were a coach of a team, they would quit on you immediately, is because you pick the wrong guys to throw under the bus. You don't take the guy that works the hardest, and because he makes an honest mistake, now all of a sudden air him out.
Very Ben McAdoo of you.
Very Ben McAdoo.
Yeah, sure, beat me up. That's fine. DCR, 98.7 ESPN, presented by Progressive Insurance. All right, if you want to have at me, you can go ahead, but I still blame RJ for not getting Pete Alonso onto this show. 800-919-3776. Let's take a Nick call or two, and then we'll break and come back and just go wall-to-wall calls. I don't know that you could handle it, to be honest. I think it'd be a lot for you today, but I would like to try just to go. We could open it up to the Jets fan, the Giants fan, the Knicks fan, the Mets fan. It's opening day, the Yankees fan. Do you think that's something you could tackle, or you think it'd be too much for you?
No, I have to do it. That's the only way. That's the only thing that's going to get me through the next half hour.
All right, let's go. 800-919-3776. We'll go there in a moment. But first, let's go to Spike, our dear friend. It says Jersey, but you're not in Jersey, Spike. You got to get rid of that.
I don't know what to do with that. Let me first wish everybody a happy Easter and Dave a happy Passover. I was remiss yesterday. Stay well, everybody. Most important, and your families. That was the worst Nick loss of the year last night. And it was a late game, and I pushed, and you know what? I don't know how many turnovers the Knicks had, but it had to be 20. And you can't play like that. You have to win that game against the worst team in the league record-wise. Now, I wouldn't want to be at practice today with Thibodeau because many laps will be run. I didn't hear the beginning of the program, boys, and RJ mentioned Dave touched on it. What did you think?
I'm livid. I'm sick over that. That to me is the worst loss of the season. And I don't even think it's all that close. Worse than getting hammered in Milwaukee, worse than anything. That's a team that stinks. You had a comfortable lead on that team, and you gagged it away, and you looked horrendous down the stretch. That is a brutal loss last night.
Yeah, not just the turnovers. I mean, it was the 22 points off of the turnovers. And what pissed me off is there wasn't a time in that game until the final buzzer when they actually lost that I thought the Knicks were going to lose.
I know. Even with 5 seconds left, when Minnesota was, I mean, they had the ball. Randall misses the shot. They throw it away. It almost looked like they wanted to lose. They throw it away. The Knicks come back down. Then they turn it over. Then they miss the shot. Then Towns gets it. He like regurgitates the ball. He just God knows why he just threw it into no man's land. I thought it was a jump ball. They come back to like no Knicks ball. All of a sudden it's Knicks ball. I got a shot to win. It's a horrendous play. It's awful all around. That was as bad as it gets last night.
Thanks for listening to the DiPietro, Canty, and Rothenberg podcast.
I don't wake up at 4 a.m. to wear a swim shirt.
Looking for more access to the show? Follow us on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter at DCR on ESPN.
Rick, I am so satisfied right now. I can't even begin to tell you. I know you got the same. To say care package.
Special delivery?
An understatement. I got bags and bags of Wendy's delivered to the house this morning. And it is, I'm on a nirvana right now.
I'm in big trouble. Yeah, I'm in big trouble, though. Milo's really upset with me. He just crossed the breakfast baconator. Now he's actually tearing into the chicken biscuit.
Why would he be upset?
Because he wanted to come on the radio and tell everyone how great it was.
Oh, let him come on.
Well, I had to run it by you. I couldn't just say you can come on. I got to run it by you first before he comes on.
Of course. I would love for Milo to come on.
At his size, it's not easy to tell him no right now.
Yeah, no, he'll pummel you. If you tell him. I mean, and no wonder he's eaten multiple breakfast sandwiches.
He's a savage, man. I'm telling you.
Oh, so Wendy sent us some it says, the copy says some breakfast this morning. Then it sent us some breakfast. They sent us everybody's breakfast this morning, including, but not limited to, the honey butter chicken biscuits, which is, it very well might be the greatest thing ever invented. And to say it was good, this is not just because they sent them and they're advertising, phenomenal. And we also got the Frosty Chinos, which are wonderful, and cold brew coffee with vanilla or chocolate frosty cream served over ice, some potatoes, oatmeal bars, the breakfast baconator, 6 slices of applewood smoked bacon, breakfast sausage, eggs, American cheese, and Swiss cheese sauce. True to the Baconator name, everything there is to love about the Wendy's breakfast menu. But the star of the show, and I think this is right. I think this is appropriate. The star of the show, the honey butter chicken biscuit. It's a freshly prepared chicken biscuit with sweet honey butter. And this April, and listen to this, it's only $1.99, an awesome breakfast sandwich at an amazing price. So if you're choosing breakfast, choose wisely and choose Wendy's for a limited time at participating Wendy's. Wendy's, where quality is our recipe, we got you. And if you don't believe me, listen to the man baby, Milo DiPietro. Hi, Milo. How are you?
Dave said, how do you like the, how'd you like the breakfast?
It's so yummy, I want to try to eat one more.
Yes.
The man baby.
Tell the man baby I think he should try to eat all of it. Go for some like a Joey Chestnut kind of a day from Milo. I think he can do it.
Dave doesn't think that you can eat another breakfast
sandwich. I don't think. Tell him I challenge him.
Accept this challenge.
I think I'm going to show you I can eat another one.
Right, okay. Milo, go crush another sandwich and then tell mom how great you're feeling after you eat your third breakfast
sandwich. He has the microphone in his mouth as he's speaking.
He'll eat anything, this kid. He'll eat absolutely anything. All right. It is great. Go to Wendy's. Only $1.99 for the honey butter biscuit sandwich. Ooh, just delicious, that chicken biscuit sandwich. All right. We have things to do here. It's opening day, so we want to get to the calls on that. The Knicks with an awful loss. I'm going to dangle this in front of you as well, my friend. I have the Todd McShay 2-round mock draft. You want to save that for a couple minutes? You want to go there right now? You tell me.
I think we take a couple of these calls.
Uh-huh.
And then, I mean, we're gonna. This is juicy right now. I mean, we're gonna have to
juicy.
Spend. I mean, we've got tomorrow to talk about this too. But I would like to hear bits and pieces to tease the people.
Okay, that's what we'll do then. Let's go to some of the calls, 800-919-3776, and then we'll very juicily get to the 2-round mock draft from one Todd McShay. Let's go. This could get heated and angry, and I think it should, and that is Omar in Brooklyn. Good morning, Omar.
Hey, how are you?
Oh, dear. You're not happy, are you?
No. From the whole night, I work, and after this type of loss, it's really painful, and I'm... the thing is, first, what a great 5.7 second, a fadeaway jump shot from RJ Barrett. That's the play they called him. Amazing. Tell me one question. I do not have an answer to this. I do not understand why it happened. You have a 2-point lead, and the other team is trying to tie it up. Why don't you win before the timeout? You said if you miss a free throw, you're on the side. So many assistant managers. You cannot double team a player who is going into the paint to Beasley for a wide open three. I don't understand that. But why this happens? Well, where is that play? Why is RJ Barrett going to the paint? What is he doing in the paint? If he gets a basket, it's a tie ball game. You still have the ball and you can win the game. Why this mental blockage that comes into the my teams, especially 1990s Knicks? They were hard-nosed teams and mentally always made a choke artist type of moves, Ricky Miller, all this history of these teams. And then this team that is growing up with you and you feel like a same old story. How can you lose this game?
It's
and
awful. Now you're looking Omar, at Omar, it is an awful loss. He called in, was it last week or the week before, and I thought his take was ridiculous. Wasn't he all upset with the Philly loss or the Brooklyn loss, and he was screaming and yelling, and I kind of put him in his place. I said, Omar, you got to calm yourself down. It's not that bad of a loss. They're a better team. Last night, awful. That is a horrendous loss, and I agree. Listen, the one thing you can't allow them to do on their final possession is take a three. You gave them a wide-open look at a three. You lost that game last night if you're the Knicks. It's a terrible loss.
No, it's awful. I mean, you had a 13-point lead in the fourth quarter. And though, I mean, McDaniels and Beasley making threes killed you last night. Killed you. Turnovers killed you. I mean, there's no explaining last night away.
Do you agree with me that's the worst loss of the season?
Yes.
It's not even close, right?
No, I don't even think it's close.
No. Well, you know what? Now you got to answer the bell. Now you got to beat Dallas.
Yeah, but again, I mean, the one thing they've consistently done this season is win these kind of games.
I know, but it makes it so frustrating. Because, I mean, you look at Boston loses last night, and everyone thinks that this is going to happen. That's what's frustrating to me as well. Everyone thinks the Knicks are going to fall apart in the second half of the season and be the 9 seed and play one game and be done. And I keep defending them, and it's hard after last night. And the thing that's so frustrating is you had a 13-point lead, you gagged it away in the fourth quarter, which is amazing to that basketball team, and your offense looked so lost. To say the loss would be an understatement what the Knicks looked like last night in the closing stages. Every possession was the same thing. I mean, get it to Randall, get out of his way, and he's going to take a 17-foot jump shot. There was no ball movement. There was nothing, Rick. It was terrible offense.
Yeah, but their offense isn't good.
I know, but it looked even worse than it should have last night.
Well, again, because you have no Derrick Rose, and IQ didn't have a good game. Offensively, he wasn't great last night. He didn't score a point last night. It does not come easy to them.
No.
That's the issue.
And there's no excuses. There's none. No excuses for last night. Let's go to Eric in Queens, and then we'll get to the McShay mock draft. Eric, good morning.
Good morning, Dave. I almost pulled the Dave last night. Almost left my house. Listen, man, I love Tibbs. I know everybody loves Tibbs. But, man, his substitution pattern is ridiculous at times. Nobody's paying attention how they're losing these games. They're up 17, 18, and, oh, my God, if I see Peyton again, I swear, I'll shoot him myself. I don't want to see Peyton out on the floor. Peyton, Bullock, and Noel's out there at the same time, you're playing 8-3. I mean, it's ridiculous. The only two guys out there to score is RJ and Randall. We got to do something. I love Tibbs to death, man, but he just got to do something with this.
Yeah, but what do you want him to do? You know? I mean, you can't magically, and thanks to the call, Eric, you can't magically, Rick, just create guys that are good offensively.
Well, no. I mean, what do you want to do? Have him sit out? I mean, sit out three-quarters of his team?
No.
Nerlens Noel isn't there for offense. He's been great defensively.
Todd and you Gibson have to play Noel. The one thing that I will, I know he wasn't good last night, but down the stretch, I mean, Elfrid Payton was bad. I would get Quickly into that game.
Quickly didn't score a point, Dave.
I know, but you know what? close with him. I'd feel better losing and closing with Quickley than I do with Elfrid Payton.
I get what you're saying, but I mean, at a certain point, like the one thing I'll give Thibs credits for is, I mean, he goes with who's playing well that night. And right now, I mean, at that position, especially when Derrick Rose is out there, limited.
Very limited.
It's not a strength of theirs.
Nobody can score.
No, in theory, it should be Quickley. But again, I mean, he's still a young kid trying to figure it out.
It was bad from him last night. A terrible loss. Let's put ourselves in a good state of mind and bring in Hammer in the Bronx. Good morning, Hammer.
Morning, guys. It is a great day to be a Mets fan. I was in the middle of doing my podcast last night, and just as we went off, one of my boys tells me that we got Lindor for the 10-year deal, which I was like, you got to be kidding me. Then right away, I get the tweet from Jeff Passan and lost my mind, had to go back on air and do a quick video for my guys at Hammer's house. And for you guys, the great news, we're locked in. I definitely think that was a great deal. Now we need to look forward to seeing if Conforto does sign. I know Scott Boras being his agent, we're probably not going to have a deal till probably during the offseason. But I couldn't be happier going into this season and going into tonight's opening night. Let's go, Mets.
There you go. Yeah, there's real reason for optimism right now. Real reason.
I honestly believe if they didn't get that deal done, it would have been disruptive to what the Mets are trying to do this season.
It could have been. Yeah, you had to get it done. You know what the truth is? There's no reason not to. I mean, when you talk about that amount of money, now, granted, $16 million is a ton of money, but not when you're talking about $325 million. You had to get it done. They got it done, and I think everybody feels good about it today.
Well, both sides got what they wanted, right?
Right.
Mets wanted 10 years, and I mean, at the end of it, Lindor knew he wasn't going to get the $385 million. And he ended up getting the $1 million more than Fernando Tatis.
You're right. So he's the highest paid. He's the highest paid, which is great. You're the Mets. You deferred some of the money, so you feel like you win a little bit in the court of public opinion. The Mets get their star for the next decade, and everyone's happy.
Yeah, and this was our guy. This was the big offseason acquisition. This was our big signing.
And now this is going nowhere. And it's funny, when they made the trade, there was, and for some reason people have been so concerned about this. Are they going to sign him to a long term deal? And my take always was, of course they're going to sign him to a long-term deal. Like, it's undoubted to me.
Well, yeah, but especially, I mean, on top of the fact that, you know, you traded for him, and I think everyone on the show felt like a deal was going to get done, but you didn't go out and sign any of the other high-priced free agents that we thought you were going to be signing this offseason. So it actually put more pressure on you to make sure, if you're Steve Cohen, that you had to get this deal done. No?
Yeah, no, I agree with you. I think you had to, and I thought they would, and of course they did. All right, so Todd McShay's mock draft. You ready? You're sitting down, right? I see you've started to take some clothes off, so that's a good sign. Is that accurate or not? You are not as fully dressed as you were when the show started. All right, so the Jets with your second. Have you looked at this yet or not?
No, I have not looked at it.
You promised me.
Yeah, I know you don't like when you bring something up. I already know because you yell at Canty all the time. You bring it up, you want me to guess, so I don't look at it.
But what I don't like that he does is he says he hasn't looked. He's looked, and then he hems and haws and then gets it right, and I know that he's looked. So, all right, here we go. Jets it at 2. This is an easy one for you. You'll be happy.
Yeah, it's good as Zach Wilson.
Yeah, Zach Wilson is your answer. You brought in Corey Davis, Keelan Cole, Tevin Coleman. You move on from Darnold. You bring in Wilson. It's the move right now, right? This is what the Jets have to do.
Yeah, I mean, I think we're at the point now where with everything that we've seen happen with the Niners trading up and everything else, it seems like this is where they're headed.
Now, we know we're going to spend a lot of time on this tomorrow, so we'll just kind of quickly flip through it. He does have Mac Jones going to the Niners at 3. Kyle Pitts, interestingly enough, to the Falcons at 4. Jamar Chase to the Bengals at 5. Devontae Smith to the Dolphins at 6. Has a trade with the Panthers at Lions at 7, has the Panthers taking Trey Lance as they move up with Detroit. Then the Lions would take Jalen Waddle at 8. Patrick Surtain, 9 to the Broncos. J.C. Horn, 10 to the Cowboys. Now, I went through it quickly, and I haven't studied this yet. As far as I'm concerned, we're at 11 now with the Giants. Is Sewell still on the board?
Sewell and...
Oh, my. If the Giants
Slater
get to 11 and Sewell is there, don't they have to take him?
Yeah, I don't understand. I know that Joe Burrow has been trying to get the Cincinnati Bengals to be all in with Jamar Chase. They were teammates at LSU. But, I mean, after the beating that Joe Burrow took last year, if I'm Cincinnati, I get, Jamar Chase is a beast. If anyone watches Pro Day, I mean, he's a beast. Don't you have to? I mean, don't you have to protect the young quarterback?
Yes, I think you do. But from the Giants' standpoint, if he's there at 11, if you can have any offensive lineman in the draft at 11, and this is a guy that they talk about being a terrific player for 13 years at one of your tackle spots, how do you? And you want to make sure that Daniel Jones has as good a year as possible. How do you not take him at 11?
I'd be hard pressed. I mean, we were saying at 11 if Slater was there,
I would take him. I really would. So not only and I don't think there's any way this happens, but McShay has the Giants trading out of 11 with the Patriots. Doesn't say what they'd get, but the Giants would trade down to 15. New England would take Justin Fields at 11, Micah Parsons to the Eagles at 12, Sewell to the Chargers at 13. I'd be very upset. Slater to the Vikings at 14. And I haven't heard a lot of this guy. I don't even know how to say his name, to be honest. Jeremiah Owusu-Koramoa, the linebacker from Notre Dame, to the Giants at 15, which would be surprising to me.
Yeah, I don't think he would love that.
I would not.
No, I mean, if you're sitting at 11, if this thing, and again, who has any idea?
We don't know.
I'm still not 100% sold that Mac Jones is going at 3, but I could be wrong. I mean, if Sewell is sitting there for you at 11, I mean, I would, or Slater sitting there for you at 11?
Slater will be. If Sewell is sitting there at 11, how can you not take him?
It would depend on what New England's giving you to bump up to 11, but I would be hard-pressed not to. That's what's going to hold you back. You have the weapons.
Yeah, the weapons are there. With Ingram and Galladay and Shepard and Barkley, the weapons are absolutely there. All right, let me run through it real quick, and then we'll get to a call, and then Santee's 3 stars. So he has the Jets at 23, the pick from Seattle for Jamal Adams, Travis Etienne, running back out of Clemson, and that solves your running back problems if you're the Jets. With the second pick of the second round, Liam Eichenberg, offensive lineman out of Notre Dame. And then the Giants at 42, the kid out of Wake Forest, Carlos Basham Jr., the edge rusher. So he has the Giants going defense, 1-2 there, and moving back to 15. So there you have it. Let's go to Trevor in Brooklyn. We'll get deeper into the McShay mock tomorrow. Trevor, you're next up on 98.7 ESPN.
Morning, guys. How you doing? Just real quick, just 2 points. You know, the last five plus years, this is a daily occurrence every day after a Knicks game, being upset, another awful loss, this and that. So the only positive, I think, is this is one of the few times this season that you wake up and you're just disgusted with what happened the night before. And real quick, my other point, Rick, you just said, Tibbs plays the best player. Pretty much, who's playing well. I don't believe that at all. Obi Toppin, he needs to be in the G League. This is 3 weeks, a month, long overdue. The kid is lost. I've never seen anybody shoot more open air ball threes. He's getting pushed around for someone his size. They need to give his minutes to Knox, who, when he does get a chance to play, he usually produces. I think it's only affecting his possible. Of getting better by keeping him in the NBA right now.
There is no more G League right now, Trevor. Trevor, there is no more G League. G League's done. There's nowhere to send him.
He's your guy. I got to be honest though. If you don't play him, that would be fine for me. Absolutely fine for me.
But you understand why he's playing him though.
I guess to get a little bit of time. But he looks so lost out there. Santi, I don't want to rush you. I want to give you the time that you need and deserve. So let's go with the 3 stars.
Today's 3 stars of DCR. Number three,
we'll go back to where it started. Near flawless open, but for one thing.
This is DPR, DCR.
No, listen, all joking aside, Rick, I thought that was an extremely powerful, well thought out, well delivered open. I'm sure, like you said, you were working on it since 1 a.m., and I'm proud of you.
What was great about it is it was terrific. You feel good about it, but you still had the little hiccup that we can have fun with.
But like you said, it brings some authenticity to it. And he didn't let the slip-up affect him.
No, he didn't, which I give him a lot of credit for.
Number two.
I'm kind of disappointed in both of you because you're big Mets fans. It's a big day to celebrate in Mets fans. And, the picks, having the Mets as your second wild card, just the lack of faith in the Metsies, I'm a little disappointed in both.
I don't want to touch the money.
The Braves might be the best team in baseball. Well, I mean, or the second best team in the National League.
The Braves probably should have beat the Dodgers last year in the playoffs.
You gotta believe.
That's a crazy take. All right, I think the Giants win the division, probably the Super Bowl. That'll make you happy.
There you go.
Number one.
And we'll move this along. Back to what I said before. I mean, you're too hard on RJ. Pete Alonso going on Barton Hahn is not on him. Be mad at the Mets.
So how do I get the number one star for beating up on RJ?
I'm just telling you.
All right. I'll take it, I guess.
We know what you're going to beat up on yourself once the show's
over. Giants talk coming your way in just a moment on KJZ. It's Rule 76.
No excuses, blanket champion. It's DiPietro, Canty, Rothenberg, and
everybody.
On 98.7 ESPN.
Thanks for listening to the DiPietro, Canty, and Rothenberg podcast.
I have nothing left.
Hear more of DiPietro, Canty, and Rothenberg live weekday mornings from 5 to 8 a.m. on 98.7 ESPN in New York, the ESPN app, the TuneIn app, or on your smart speaker.
Hey, Alexa, play ESPN New York 98.7.